Hello, Husker fans. It is the week of snow and bad news in Nebraska football. Hello, everybody. This is the Pick Six Podcast. I'm Sam McEwen, along with Evan Bland, Dirk Chatlin, and Tom Chattel. We don't have anything to talk about this week. Nothing at all. As here it is, January 27th, Wednesday morning. I think I've got 3 feet of snow sort of carved off to the side of my driveway. Never experienced this in my life. And simultaneously to experiencing the biggest snowstorm of our lives, or at least my life, Nebraska had a hell of a lot of news in the last 4 or 5 days, starting with an interview that Scott Frost gave Evan Bland and I, along with 2 other media outlets, and big news this week with 3 Husker players, Will Farniok, Cade Warner, and the big one, Luke McCaffrey, transferring from the program. It is a heavy, busy news week. I think it's over for this week, but I got to be honest, I'm not entirely sure. It's possible that some other player may transfer. You just never know. As Frost said to us last week, it's Friday. It's early. Anything can happen. And I think that's absolutely true in the context of what's going on with Nebraska football right now. We're going to talk, obviously, about the departure of Luke McCaffrey and generally how Nebraska has managed its quarterback situation since the arrival of Scott Frost. It's an interesting dilemma, an interesting situation. And then we'll talk a little bit about Frost's confidence and certitude that Nebraska is right on the cusp of getting a lot better, especially on offense. And he said so in our interview and is not changing any of his assistant coaches out and is going to stand pat on that. And then at the end, we'll talk a little bit of recruiting with Evan and I for 2022, because I think that's going to start to heat up here in late January and then mid to late February. I think you're going to see more and more movement. We'll talk Nebraska hoops when it becomes more relevant to do so. I don't anticipate Nebraska playing a game until either late next week or that February 6th game that has now been scheduled with Michigan State. So there's not a lot going on in that program right now other than them coming back from COVID and returning to the court. I think we may hear from Fred Hoiberg this week, but I just don't anticipate a lot of news there. The program's been in a holding pattern and is set for a hellacious February. And then we don't know Nebraska's baseball schedule yet. The volleyball team's doing what it's doing. The women's basketball team's doing what it's doing. Those are good stories. But we'll shelve those for another day and focus specifically on Nebraska football. I want to remind everybody, as always, that our sponsor is the Schwalbach Agency. Team Schwalbach is a family-owned Allstate insurance agency with 4 licensed insurance pros, saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans money. They sell homeowner, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys, motorcycles, boats, RVs, off-road vehicles, little things with plows on them that can help plow the streets, snowmobiles. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mossick, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. You can reach them again at www.nebraskaallstate.com. That's www.nebraskaallstate.com or 402-590-5200. They will help you save a lot of money. Thanks to Team Schwalbach, the Schwalbach Agency. Okay, Nebraska lost 3 players yesterday. The big story is Luke McCaffrey. I'll have a story later this week on just how long we've known that it was likely that Luke McCaffrey was going to transfer. Hey, it's been 2 weeks. And so we'll kind of lay out everything that we kind of thought was there and also lay out some more detail on the Wandale Robinson transfer. And I think people will be very interested in that story. But let's go with what we have right now. Luke McCaffrey has transferred from the program. He was the backup quarterback and the starting quarterback at times last year, used in multiple roles over the 2 years that he was here. He insisted on wanting to be a quarterback. The coaches allowed him to do that. Now he will transfer despite Scott Frost insisting that he remain at quarterback. He wasn't probably going to beat out Adrian Martinez this year, but he might have. You never know. And Frost intimated to us that McCaffrey had some concerns with COVID, but honestly, McCaffrey didn't mention anything about COVID concerns yesterday, and he just went ahead and transferred. So there's a lot there. Tom, you wrote a column about it. Good column. Evan, you wrote a very detailed story about it. I'll let you guys go And you can start with, here we are, McCaffrey has left the program. The impact of that, what it says about Nebraska, what it says about McCaffrey, and where we go from here. Fire away, folks.
Evan, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a lot to unpack, no doubt about it. I mean, where do you begin? I guess I would start with the conversation that McCaffrey is a quarterback, saw himself as a quarterback. And I kind of wonder how that narrative maybe changed over the last couple of years, because when I didn't end up talking with him a ton during his Nebraska career, but I did talk to him as a recruit coming out of Colorado. And he said at the time that the reason he wanted to come to Nebraska, or one thing that put Nebraska over the top from a lot of other high profile programs, was the fact that it did see him as a quarterback and it did give him a chance to do that. I wonder how much that remained the case as he went through his Nebraska career, because we saw it at different points 2 years ago when he lined up as a receiver against Maryland, you know, against Ohio State in the opener. His first touch last season was a 47-yard run.
Downer.
That was one of the highlights of the season, to be honest. It just felt like the sky was the limit at that point for him. But he stayed at quarterback. And I feel like after talking with Scott Frost last week, it almost felt to me more like it was Nebraska saying, we see you as a quarterback, and less about Luke saying, I want to stay at quarterback and could play elsewhere. So I wonder, I'll be curious if he ever ends up talking. And Sam, I know you and I have tried to reach him numerous times to get him to break things down, because I think that's a key part of how we process Luke McCaffrey leaving. Is this a playing time issue where he felt like he wasn't going to beat out Adrian Martinez, in which case that falls in line with what you see all over college football with players transferring? Or was this similar to a Wandale Robinson situation where he felt like he was either being misused, or he was playing out of position? Maybe he wanted to look elsewhere in terms of another position, and Nebraska continued to see him as a quarterback. So I'll be really curious to see kind of if and when he unpacks some of that. If it's the latter, if he feels like he wasn't being developed as a quarterback, or if he felt like he was being used out of position or whatever, you know, that's a much, I think, more serious conversation when we talk about Nebraska and what it's doing, as opposed to if he was just trying to get more playing time, because that was the situation with Cade Warner. That was the situation with Will Farniak. Those guys wanted to find more playing time elsewhere. That's a pretty common scenario. But if his situation is more like what Wandale Robinson's was, I think that becomes a conversation that's a lot different in terms of how we analyze what Scott Frost and Nebraska have been the last couple of years.
Mm. Yeah, I think a lot of those things can be true. You know, one of the things about this past season was we didn't get to have our daily 30-person scrum with the players, and we never really got to talk to Luke about this stuff. And, you know, even though a lot of those times those guys don't really say anything, you kind of get a feel for them, you know, kind of where they are. I mean, you can read the body language and how they're saying things and what they're saying, you know, the tea leaves and all that. I wonder a couple of things. One, and I wish I had pointed this out in my column, but I didn't. You know, how did McCaffrey feel about, okay, you're the guy now. Oh, you're not the guy anymore. And did Frost mishandle that this past year? How did he feel about that? And did he feel like that would be kind of the way it was going to go next year also? If you're going to develop, you need to be on the field, you know, at some point. You need to play through mistakes, even though people aren't in the mood for that right now. But my other question is, Evan, and maybe you can help me with this, is okay, all of a sudden, you know, a year ago, people, Nebraska fans were really into McCaffrey. Like, he's the next guy. Remember after last season? Oh, we need to play McCaffrey now. He's the quarterback. He's the guy. Then after the Illinois game, the mood around him really changed. Like, oh, yeah, I started hearing, oh, he's not the guy. He can't throw. He's not a quarterback. But I wonder, what did he think after the Illinois game? Was that a wake-up call for him that I can't run this offense? I can't throw. I can't do what I should be doing? Or was he still locked into, I can do this, and I'm not getting a chance? I'd be curious to know that.
Well, I do remember him after the game. I put this in the story. His comments about his play were that his play was reflected in his poor week of practice leading up to that. Felt like he didn't put a lot of energy into that, and it didn't turn out into the game. So, you know, that's kind of where his mind was, at least in those interviews afterward.
Yeah. I just wonder, the whole tenor around him just flipped after that game. Like, we get him over here. He can't play quarterback. And I wonder if, you know, deep down in his heart and his mind, if he thought the same thing, if that created any doubts, or, you know, he's a very confident guy. Maybe he still thought he could do it, but I never believed Frost for a second that he was going to keep him there. That I think he was just telling him that, but I can be wrong.
Sam, this is not McCaffrey specific, but man, it sure feels like Nebraska has been in this position a lot the last 25 years, you know, trying to find, trying to figure out whether a guy can play quarterback or not play quarterback. And, you know, trying to square peg round hole a little bit. I realize it's partly due to the fact that I have a long memory and maybe not much creativity, but I just think I have so many Taylor Martinez flashbacks, you know, as we talk about this situation. I think, you know, Nebraska's inability to create depth at the position, inability to develop a natural quarterback who, you know, actually gets better from one year to the next. And that's obviously not McCaffrey. That's Adrian Martinez. I mean, it's in some ways I look at McCaffrey and I see Taylor. And in some ways I look at Adrian and I see Taylor, and that's, you know, and then there's of course the Eric Crouch, Bobby Newcomb stuff. I mean, it just feels like Nebraska has been in this position a lot where it has options at quarterback, but it never really, nobody's ever entirely satisfied with it, and that's just the nature of the position in some regard. But I think it's also a reflection of Nebraska's inability to, to recruit and develop, you know, a natural, versatile quarterback who can do all the things that you want a quarterback to do. Scott Frost, not unlike Bo Pelini, has really hitched his wagon to Adrian Martinez, and I think it needs to pay off this next year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's very fair. I think, Tom, you're right that there was a shift in what people thought of Luke after the Illinois game. I think to some degree the media follows perhaps too much. They tailgate the coaching staff too much. And I got to be honest, at the time, I even tweeted this out. I thought McCaffrey deserved more of a chance. And I want to frame why very specifically. The reason I thought he deserved more of a chance is because they gave him a chance, not necessarily because I thought he was better than Martinez, but because a two-game sample size, one of which was a win, was, a very, very small sample size on which to judge a quarterback's play. Simultaneously, I remember there being commentaries after the 2019 season along the lines of, well, if Noah Vedral had played against Purdue, Nebraska would have won that game. And I haven't the foggiest idea why people would have thought that, other than I think that was some sort of revisionist impression coming from someone within the program. There are multiple issues as it relates to position management there that I think is it's hard to get their arms around it. I think they desired to give McCaffrey a chance for the genuine reason of this ain't working with Adrian. We're not getting it done. We scored 17 against Ohio State. We scored 13 against Northwestern. We're not winning these games. I understand who Northwestern is, and they won the Big Ten West title, but Nebraska should never lose to Northwestern. I think they know that intrinsically and internally, that Northwestern doesn't have as much talent as Nebraska does, and it bedevils them that Northwestern continues to have as much success against Nebraska as it does. And so I think they came out of that Northwestern game and said, we have to change something. We're playing Penn State next week. We need a change. And for reasons, if they beat Illinois, if that first play of that game doesn't happen, does Luke ever get unseated from quarterback? I don't know. But I feel like so many things are results-based. In other words, decisions are made based on, you know, outcomes, and they're made pretty quickly. And I think as a result, you've had this kind of uncertainty at the position where I think McCaffrey legitimately could have said, hey, it isn't so much that I don't think I can beat out Adrian Martinez. And I think it's possible that Luke just isn't as good as Martinez is, especially at, I don't know, handling certain things in the pass game. But I think there was an uncertainty about whether or not, A, he could do that, and then, B, if he didn't beat him out and Martinez was still the guy, what McCaffrey was going to do in lieu of that. Because how do you take one of your best athletes and leave him on the sideline just in case Martinez gets hurt and McCaffrey has to go play quarterback for 7 weeks? And I think there's that question mark around the program constantly that once Vedrill left, and Vedrill's a quarterback. He isn't one of these other things. He's not a running back or a receiver or any of that. When Vedrill left the program, they lost their security blanket, their security quarterback, and they were forced to put Luke in a situation where he had to stand on the sidelines and protect his body just in case Adrian Martinez got hurt. And one of the reasons for that is that Nebraska has never given themselves under Frost a real chance to just grow as a team. There's always this sort of urgency and impetus to win. And I know that sounds like a ludicrous statement, but if you're given a long runway and you have all this time to build the program, it feels like there are consistently decisions made that seem to shortchange long-term growth for the potential of a short-term win. And the things that I feel like I feel like when Frost got there, he at Nebraska, he made a long-term decision with Adrian Martinez and chose not to pursue Joe Burrow for the right reasons. And people have disagreed with me for in many ways about this, but that he chose to stick with the kid and build the right way as opposed to winning right away. But then you look at the way they built the roster right away in 2018, and you naturally second guess yourself and say, well, wait a minute. The way they built the roster so fast was designed to win right away, and gosh darn it, they probably ought to have taken Joe Burrow under those circumstances. So there's an incongruency, I think, between the way that they run the quarterback position and the way that they've done other things. And until those things get easily on track, it feels like that position is always going to be in flux. And you're going to have this constant conversation about guys transferring. I mean, you know, I think Vedrill transferred to Nebraska from UCF in January of 2018. I don't think he arrived until later, but he was there in the spring. He transferred to Nebraska in 2018. And the minute Vedrill transfers to Nebraska, you know that O'Brien and Jebby are like, well, there's the number two quarterback. We don't have much of a chance once Vedrill is eligible. And so both those guys left. So they transferred out. And then Vedrill transferred out because he didn't think he could get a real chance at a starting job. And now McCaffrey has transferred out. And so going into next year, you have Adrian Martinez, Logan Smothers, who's never played a game, and Heinrich Harburg, who's not going to play right now. I mean, I don't think that would be a wise – I think Matt Masker might be more likely to play if they absolutely had to have somebody at this moment than Harburg, because I think Harburg needs work. And he could be a good player one day, but I don't think he's ready to go play in a big-time college football game. It just feels like the position in general is constantly in flux, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
I want to just make a couple of points, and they won't be directly related to yours. But one, I think it's important that we acknowledge that Luke McCaffrey had some serious quarterback deficiencies that were going to make it very difficult for him to have long-term success.
I think that's fair. Yes.
There were just throws, especially throws that he just did not appear to be able to make. So that's one point. The other thing I think in commenting on the transfer wave, I just think Nebraska's perennial disappointment, the losing and losing and losing, gives the program such a small margin for error when they're trying to build, convince these guys to stay, right? Like, hey, this is kind of fun. If I'm going off to Lincoln, Nebraska, it's fun if we are 7-2 or, 11-1 or even 9-4. It's not as much fun to go to Lincoln, Nebraska when we have a losing record. And I think sometimes even when the depth chart situation is not all that difficult for guys, it just appears that they've decided that the program isn't worth their patience, isn't worth their trouble. And I keep coming back to the fact that Nebraska finishes almost every year in disappointment. And that just must leave some sort of bitter taste, especially in the mouth of offensive guys, where they just, the heck with it. I'm going to go start over. I mean,
yes.
Is McCaffrey really going to go play quarterback somewhere at a school or walk into a situation as enticing as Nebraska where he has a chance equal to this? I don't think so.
McCaffrey would have been the starting quarterback at Nebraska in 2022 unless Martinez made the unfathomable decision to come back again. I don't think Adrian is going to come back. I think he's going to play in the NFL. So Luke was going to be the starting quarterback of this team.
Oh, I don't know about that.
If you're telling me compared to the guys they got now and the fact that he would have had much more experience than Logan Smothers, I think Luke would have been the starting quarterback.
Okay.
They would have had to go and recruit somebody over him from a transfer portal. I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying, no, you're right. When you say that Nebraska's situation is enticing, you're right. Because he's now going to have to go earn all of that credit somewhere else when he had a bunch of it here.
Yeah, no, we're on the same page there. I'm not as bullish on the idea of him as the starting quarterback in 2022, but he certainly would have had a very good chance, and he's not going to have an equal chance somewhere else. So the thing that I come back to is just that these guys just must not be having much fun at Nebraska.
Right.
And I think that's the thing that we just need to remind ourselves when we analyze this transfer situation, especially guys who come from 1,000 miles away, Florida or Kentucky or, name your far away Nebraska recruiting hotbed. It really depends. The reason that it worked for 40 or 50 years here, bringing guys in from all over the country, is that there were rewards for it. They won. It's fun to win. And when you're going to Lincoln, Nebraska for college and you're not winning, what is keeping you there? I just don't know if we can overstate the obvious enough.
And yet the defensive players came back.
Right.
I think it's more, I think there might be something to that, but I think it's more about the playing time. I really do. I think Notre Dame just lost a bunch of guys and they're just in the playoff. It's a free agent market, but I think there's Sam, we'll never know the answer to this, but if there hadn't been a pandemic, I know Vedral wanted to try to win the job last spring, and he was going to stay and try to win the job.
Yeah.
What if? I mean, I really think – I know we all have dynamic quarterbacks, and I'm going to sound hypocritical for saying this, but in some ways this program needs a steady hand at quarterback and not a roller coaster, not a highlight machine.
Yeah.
You just wonder – there was a calming influence at quarterback where it was steady and he just made plays and was just a good, solid quarterback. Would that kind of change how the team played? I mean, it's an interesting question.
Yeah, it is.
But I wrote about Martinez ad nauseum early and I hyped him up and all that stuff. And I love writing about him, but the roller coaster in basketball, it does get tiring, and you just need to have somebody steady come along and have a winning season or two, a couple bowl games, and just calm the hell down, because it gets tiring. It does. And we write about this stuff over and over, and I think there is a lot of anger and a lot of people, a lot of frustration around the program, and it'd be good to have people just smile and enjoy football. And yeah, I don't think anybody's doing that.
I'll say this. I felt like Luke McCaffrey's interviews with us this year were close to a hostage interview. And I don't mean that Nebraska did anything wrong. I thought Luke's interviews with us this year were very, very clipped and not foggy, but don't want to answer these questions. Don't really want to. He, for all the positive energy that you'd hear about him exuding within the program, the energy that he would exude to us was often very uncomfortable. Like it was, I don't really want to talk about myself. I kind of only want to talk about the team. If you ask me a question that's supposed to kind of show me a little of my personal side, I'm probably not going to do much of that. Evan, I don't really believe that McCaffrey didn't bring it in practice that week energy wise against Illinois. It makes no sense. They won a game. I just don't believe that McCaffrey went into practice the next week and wasn't happy and excited. I think he was taking one for the team there for maybe some other guys. And so like the weird thing that happened about, the Rutgers game, he goes out there, he dresses, he's in pads before the game, but he doesn't throw. And then before the game, he goes in the locker room, he changes into sideline clothes. It just felt odd. That just felt odd. And I just feel like there's just something that they've got to make sure going forward with Smothers and Harburg. And Smothers and Harburg are different people than McCaffrey, I think. And it may be in a way that helps Nebraska. But I just think there was a lack of clarity about what his role was. I mean, in the first game against Ohio State, he's doing all kinds of stuff. By game three, he's a starting quarterback. By game six against Minnesota, or seven against Minnesota, he wasn't doing really anything at all. He played two plays, two of them were passes, one of them was an interception, and then he didn't play against Rutgers. It was just an odd progression of the season. And I think Nebraska tried to save it. I think Scott Frost very much wants McCaffrey in the program, believes in the kid, wants him here, and may still try to keep him here, may try to talk him back into coming here. I think that's possible. But somehow, some way, it got away from those guys. It got away from them. I don't know how. And I'm sure they're gonna kick themselves a little bit over it, because I don't think they wanted this one. My vibe, and Evan, you can chime in on this, is frustrated Wandale Robinson left, but they'd done what they could, and it was kind of we've been dealing with this for 2 years now, and if you gotta go, go. Thank you. Goodbye. Is that the vibe you got? Because that's the vibe I've gotten about Wandale for a while. Like, okay, we gave you the ball as many times as we could. You're 5 foot. We list you at 5'10". You're probably 5'8". You're not as fast as Tyreek Hill, so we can't run 30-yard over routes with you. So we're giving you the ball where we can, how we can. And if that's not enough, good luck at Kentucky, where they're going to run the Rams offense. That's what Kentucky's told him. And Nebraska's not going to lie about where we're going to run the Rams offense. So he's leaving. And I think they weren't happy about it, but they were okay with it. And not only that, they kind of had thought he would leave.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, the thing about McCaffrey that's interesting to me too is from a quarterback perspective, how Nebraska has managed it. It's frustrating if you're a Nebraska fan, but from an actual production standpoint, you know, I think that puts it in perspective a little bit. I mean, he had 8 turnovers in his 5 games this year.
He did.
As you guys have pointed out, he's not a prolific passer. So I think a lot of this too is tethered to this idea of what Luke McCaffrey could be. You know, it's tethered to the last name and the fact that his brother's an NFL superstar.
Yeah.
It's tethered to seeing what he could do, or just imagining what he could do as a running back and a receiver. There was so much, I think, potential there. You look at the actual numbers, and then they weren't overwhelming. They don't blow you away.
Yeah.
But I think that to me was striking, was just what he could have been, and then what Nebraska really believed that he could be. I mean, we talked with Scott Frost about it even last weekend, going into last weekend. He felt like he was going to be back. He said, yeah, you never know, but he felt like he was going to be back even into last weekend. So this was something that got away from the team late, and that's pretty frustrating.
I think they're very frustrated. And Dirk, I think the comparison to Taylor Martinez is fair as it relates to Luke. I think if you give Luke McCaffrey, Kenny Bell, Quincy Enunwa, Jamal Turner, Kyler Reed, Ben Cotton, Amir Abdullah, and Rex Burkhead, if you gave him that supporting cast, he'd have been about as good as Taylor Martinez was in 2012.
Yeah, like, that's a good point.
They don't have that cast. If you gave Scott Frost that cast, they're not finishing 3-5 this year. Part of the challenge here is that Mike Riley did not do a good enough job of recruiting. He knows that. Mike knows that. Scott knew it, but Scott hasn't changed it. Not nearly enough. You can't recruit guys that then come in and don't play, or your number one receiver on your team cannot probably be 5'8" and play in the slot. And that was true for 2 straight years. In 2019, it was J.D. Spielman, and in 2020, it was Wandale. It's very hard to win football games when your top receiver is a slot guy who's 5'9". That's just hard. And that's not the story that Taylor Martinez. I mean, Taylor Martinez had Niles Paul and Brandon Kinney and Kenny Bell and Quincy Enunwa and Seathan Carter and Ben Cotton and Kyler Reed and 2 running backs who are in the NFL. And Adrian Martinez and Luke McCaffrey were not throwing to Rex Burkhead and Amir Abdullah this year. I mean, Dedrick Mills might play in the NFL. I think he might. But these other guys that they've got there are not Rex Burkhead and Amir Abdullah. So people have to appreciate that Scott's got to do a better job. His staff has to do a better job of putting players around the quarterback that are commensurate to the Taylor Martinez years. And one of the reasons, Dirk, you were hard on Taylor. I know that. And harder than I would have been and harder than I was. But I think the point is fair in saying that he had a sports car of talent. He had 4 NFL players on one team. Enunwa, Bell, 4 NFL draftees. And he still had, you know, 22 turnovers 1 year. So I get it. It's a fair comparison, and you just wish that these quarterbacks, Martinez and McCaffrey, had the kind of players around them that Taylor did, because I think they might be different quarterbacks.
Sam, I was digging through some old quotes the last couple days, and I stumbled on one in the spring of 2019. It would have been February, and Evan and Tom, you might remember this, but Frost was down at an event in Kansas City, and he compared he said he'd rather have Martinez than Trevor Lawrence, or, you know, compared him favorably to Trevor Lawrence after their freshman years of college. And whew,
yeah,
talk about a comp that did not age well.
It didn't. But Adrian's got there are things about him that program clearly loves him. He's a good man. Like, Adrian is a good guy. And, you know, his willingness, and they put it on video, which I thought was interesting after they beat Penn State. That was more about Adrian Martinez than it was about Luke. But his willingness to say that about it isn't about me, it isn't about him, it's about the team. That's, there aren't, not every quarterback would do that. I admire that about, I mean, Adrian really is a team guy, and I think Frost just deeply appreciates who he is as a person.
Can I go back quick to the point that Dirk had made earlier about just, it's not a lot of fun when you don't win and it's hard to get guys here. Just thought I'd share a quick story from last year. I had met the parents of a highly rated receiver who had considered Nebraska. And this had never happened to me before, and it's never happened since. But this dad actually called me up last year as his son is trying to make a decision between Nebraska and another school or two. And they're from the South.
This is a good player, by the way, he's talking about.
He had a good year.
What changed Nebraska's season this year, by the way?
He's from the South. And his dad calls me up and said he wanted to talk to somebody not affiliated with the university who could just talk about what Nebraska is like. And he wanted to learn all about the team, all about the program. And he said that his son really liked Nebraska, that the family really loved the academics. They loved the facilities, but they were worried that the wins wouldn't come. And they were worried what happens when the losing piles up and the negativity that sets in. And ultimately, he didn't choose Nebraska. He chose to go somewhere else and had a really good season last year. But
sure did.
I thought that was...
So did his team.
I thought it was really illustrative of the challenge that Nebraska has, where these guys, you know, the infrastructure is there in terms of facilities and all the stuff that we hear about, but these guys are more attuned to the struggles of winning than they ever have been. And so it's just, we say it all the time, but they need to start winning some games, showing some promise, and then all that other stuff, it can start snowballing. But it just hasn't to this point. And it just feels like they're, to use another snow analogy, you know, they're spinning their tires trying to get out of this drift. And if they can, the momentum could come, but they're just not there.
First of all, Evan, you just started a message board thread because now everybody's going to blame you. Whatever you told that kid is, you obviously ruined it. And I, as a parent,
I believe that kid was already committed to another school. You tell me if I'm right, Evan. And was considering Nebraska. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yep. It was. And he loved Nebraska. And I didn't talk to the kid. I talked to the dad. And the dad told me multiple times. He said, you don't he basically said, trust me, we're not going to change our decision based on what you tell me. They were just looking for some intel. But I thought it offered a real window into their thinking.
Well, Nebraska decided to recruit somebody else. Not somebody else didn't play this year because of health reasons. And if you'd ask me to pick between that somebody and this somebody, I would have told you that the somebody Nebraska got was better. Now, that guy is apparently ready to go. And if he's ready to go, then we'll see how he does. But Nebraska caught a bad hand in getting a guy like Omar Manning who then didn't play. That can't happen again. He's got to play. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But it was an interest. Yes, I remember Evan telling me about this. It was right before the Maryland game. Yeah.
That's totally something I would do as a parent. Like, you know, I want to talk to somebody who's not a cheerleader and see what they say. But, you know, I just think it's a little bit of a chicken and an egg situation. You know, Nebraska, they need, you know, they need somebody to get this thing going. But in order to get it going, you know, does the talent come first or does the winning culture come first? And I think the problem is, you know, Nebraska, in order to convince these guys to come, they got to start winning. And in order to win, they need some of these guys to come. So it's a really tough situation.
And they're going to run it back with the same coaching staff. What do you think of that?
I mean, I was surprised. I felt like special teams needed to be addressed in a different way than it ended up being. You know, it felt like this was an off season when there needed to be some kind of a bigger change made. And maybe this wasn't the time to say, everyone sees where this is going and we're going to take off next year. That to me was where I thought a change would happen was in regards to special teams, and maybe something still will be, but to this point, they, as Scott Frost indicated to us, they're running it back.
That surprise you, Tom?
Well, I mean, who would you change? I mean, he got a new coordinator last year. You wouldn't touch the defensive staff, right? You leave them alone. Am I right there? So you're talking about offense, correct?
Yeah, I think they just as soon keep the defensive staff the same. I think Travis Fisher will be in line for other jobs, other places every year. Right. I believe he was a candidate at Jordan. But
I kept hearing
I don't think they want to change anything over there. No.
I kept hearing the offensive line was going to be going to change that, and then that didn't happen. You know, Mario Verduzco is a lovely man, a wonderful guy to talk to. I don't see the results. And I don't know that you need, you know, the head coach can't be, he can't micromanage a position. But
feels like Scott's going to do a lot of quarterback coaching this year too.
Well, you know, his head coach did that. You know, sure. He coached quarterbacks.
Yeah,
That's true. His assistant offensive line coach was the special teams coach, Dan Young. So,
yep.
I mean, it can be done. But so your head coach is a quarterback, a former quarterback. You got an offensive coordinator and a quarterback coach, and you're not getting that much out of the position. So is that a place where you could change? Yeah, I think you could and hire somebody special teams. But, you know what? He brought him here, and he's going to stand by him. At least the ones he didn't get rid of last year, he didn't stand by them. So he has changed, but unless there's a magic guy out there who can get them to start playing clean football and be more efficient. I mean, who's that? Would a new offensive line coach do that? Would a new quarterback or a new, I don't know. It starts with the head coach. But the head coach has to start. It starts with him.
Yeah.
And he's got to be the guy who lays down the law and says, do this or else.
Yeah.
And they haven't had a lot of depth to really threaten people with that. Now they kind of do. I think it's, you know, I've said this many times. We've all written it. They've got to clean it up. And I'm not sure that the shuffling the chairs does that. Maybe it makes the offensive line. I think offensive line starts with talent and goes from there too. So,
yeah. I think they're getting there on the line. I think they're getting there.
I guess I'm saying, yes, I thought there could be some changes, but it starts at the top. And he's got to find a way. I mean, this is really interesting. I'd love to ask Scott this sometime. Is there a more confident person? Have you ever met a more confident person in your life than Scott Frost? Confident in himself and where he's been called cocky. Came out of the chute in Chicago a few years ago, laying down the law. Here's what we're going to do. But his team still has not played that confident. It doesn't translate. And Scott was there when Nebraska was the most efficient machine in college football.
Yeah.
And so he's seen it up close. Now, was that because they had all these stations and practice and reps? And I don't, that's a good point that they don't necessarily have right now, but are they not practicing the right way? Is it too fast? Or are things not getting corrected?
Yeah.
He's got to find the answer to that. And I really think, I'm not sure that an assistant coach does that. I think it starts with the head coach.
Mm-hmm. they can cut down their turnovers considerably from the fumbling perspective if they stop running their quarterbacks. I mean, it's, this isn't like, yeah, that it's not an if then statement, or it is an if then statement. That's what they want to do, then they can do it. The problem with it, and we asked Frost this on Friday, is when you do that, you require everyone around the quarterback to get better, and you take the quarterback out of what they call an 11-man run game. And you give the defense back a man, essentially, and you know, you make yourself Iowa. There's a reason why Iowa football doesn't run for as many yards per game as Nebraska, because they don't use a quarterback. But the difference is that Iowa isn't fumbling the ball all over the place all the time with their quarterbacks, because they don't run the ball. And so Iowa's run game, you can't just look at the yards production. It's deceptive. It is the anchor to their offense, but it is deceptively so. It's more like a pro-style running game. Nebraska, on the other hand, runs the ball every which way but loose, especially with its quarterbacks. And the problem with it is, even for the yards that it produces, it's producing a lost fumble per game. And that's a problem. And that is a literal loss of, like, no points drive. And they'll have to, only Frost can resolve that. Because Matt Lubick, who I do think is calling half the plays and may call more next year, We'll do what his boss wants him to do. And if that means running the quarterback to gain yards, then that's what they'll do. It's going to be on Frost to decide that ratio. And until they turn the knob down on the quarterback runs, they're probably not going to turn it over at a rate that they're happy with. It was true when it was Taylor. It was true when it was Tommy. It's just true. It was true when it was Scott. It was true.
How do you call half the plays?
Fumble the ball. What's that?
How do you call half the plays? How does that work?
Evan, do you want to explain what Frost explained to us?
Yeah, I wasn't there.
Hey, hop off. I got to go speak to a class here. But I will another definitely.
Class. All right, man.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even know if they're going to do this today, and they ended up doing two classes instead of one. So.
Do it, man. Take care.
Yeah. You know, what Frost had said, especially with the last, I think, three or four games of the season, he said it was just a 50-50 split with him and Matt Lubick. And, you know, some of that was maybe on a drive-by-drive sort of basis. And Frost did and still does have veto power to take over, to knock, you know, strike down a play and put his own in, or to take over at any point that he feels like he needs to do that. But, you know, he had said he'd never given that kind of leeway to a coordinator before, never handed over the reins to that extent. And, you know, when he was asked about kind of how he felt about that, he said it was refreshing. He didn't have a play sheet in front of his face. He could worry about, you know, which special teams guys were going in on a punt coverage or talking to someone after an emotional moment in the game. Like, it just, to me, it was, you know, a little evidence, a little road marker of a guy who's becoming more of a head coach and not an offensive coordinator, which has kind of been his bread and butter.
Yeah, I think that's I'm not a coach, so, like, it's hard for me. I'd have to sit down with Lubick and kind of unpack all the things that he's talking about and sees. But I actually think Lubick's done some good things for them. I really do. I think he's built a pass game that has some more structure to it. They have some nice concepts that I think he has installed that are, you know, reliable. I think he has made good on his desire to create some one-on-one situations in the red zone, specifically for Travis Bokolek. Bokolek's got to catch that ball, and Martinez has got to hit him. But, you know, they've created that. I think they've built some good things into their system. That their red zone passing game wasn't great this year, but it was better. And some of it is they need better personnel. They need receivers who are big, who can catch the ball. And Wendell Robinson, get this, Wendell Robinson had two red zone catches this year. He had 51 catches overall. Two of them were inside the opponent's 20. Six for his entire career were inside the opponent's 20. You can't run. You cannot run an offense based on that. You have to have someone who can catch the football in the end zone. And Wandell is not, it's not his fault. He is a 20 to 20 guy. Hell, even Tyreek Hill is 20 to 20. The difference is that Tyreek catches a ball at someone's 40-yard line and he runs it all the way in because nobody can catch him because he's cheating. The challenge is inevitably with those kind of players is, you know, how do you get the ball to him in the red zone? Well, that's hard. So, but I think Lubick has done some good things for them. I think Frost does trust him. But again, Lubick's going to do what Frost tells him to do. And so when you get right down to the brass tacks, if Frost wants an offense where the quarterback runs it 7 to 10 times a game, then he can have it. And it's like you make a decision with a diet and you say, I am not, even if it looks really good, I am not going to eat that. I'm not going to do this. Even if it would make me feel better in the moment, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to stick to this philosophy right here. If Frost sticks to it, they will have fewer turnovers because the quarterbacks will not fumble as much. I mean, it's axiomatic. I mean, you can almost guarantee it. There are course years where there are anomalies, but they're not that often. And do you want to know the list of teams whose quarterbacks ran the ball as much as Nebraska's quarterbacks did? There's two teams in the P5, Virginia and Virginia Tech. Other teams include Georgia Southern, Eastern Michigan, Army, I think Navy. Although I don't actually, maybe not Navy, but Army. I mean, if I rattle off some of the names of the quarterbacks that we're talking about, like some of the schools these kids play at, you get the picture really quickly of where Nebraska's offense is. Eastern Michigan, Liberty, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Coastal Carolina, Georgia Southern, Hawaii, let's see, Florida State, although they didn't run it as much as Martinez did. But you get a flavor for the kinds of offenses that we're talking about here. Middle Tennessee State, most of them are G5 offenses. They're not, most of them aren't P5. And at Virginia Tech, I mean, it didn't go that well this year. Virginia, they did okay. Bronco Mendenhall's the coach there. He's always trying to find the next Taysom Hill. So, you know, that's kind of where Nebraska's at. That's the kind of offense they run. Penn State runs a similar offense. So Penn State moved to a more of a pro style this year with Kirk Soraka. They fired Kirk Soraka so they could go back to their spread run thing. James Franklin's made his, you know, he's made his case, but that's where Nebraska's at. And if they want to change who they are, then they can. But currently, that's where they reside. They reside in this world of, you know, Virginia and Virginia Tech, and then like eight group of five teams, including Army, Liberty, and Coastal Carolina. Good teams, by the way. Those are all good teams. But just know what kind of offense you're running and the kind of players you're going to attract.
What do you think and you asked this on Twitter last night, Sam, but Nebraska loses McCaffrey. They have three scholarship quarterbacks and Adrian Martinez, Logan Smothers, Heinrich Harburg. What do you do if you're Nebraska with two open spots left in this class? Do you use one of those scholarship spots on a quarterback of some kind? Do you stand pat? I think that's an interesting discussion because, as we've discussed recently, it seems like the assumption out there is just that, well, clearly Nebraska needs to add a quarterback now because they lost a scholarship quarterback. I don't know. Maybe start with you, Tom. I mean, what do you think? Should Nebraska bring in somebody else, or do you roll with what you have?
Well, I don't know Logan Smothers from Tommy Smothers, okay? But if he's the next guy, let him be the next guy. And I understand you've always got to have quarterbacks. Everybody recruits, and they just kind of take care of themselves. If they get impatient, they leave, or they get a chance to play, they stay. Everybody has that issue. I mean, Justin Fields came from Georgia. Joe Burrow came from Ohio State. I mean, everybody has these issues. I just think you can also get them in the portal now too. I don't think the urgency is to have four or five quarterbacks. I think you can probably go get one who's disgruntled somewhere else if you needed one. So I don't think you really need a bunch of quarterbacks right now. I think there's other needs as well. I guess maybe you can answer this question for me. I don't know why I'm uncertain on this, but is Marquis Stepp eligible next year?
As of this moment, technically no.
No,
because the NCAA hasn't passed the single one-time transfer rule, and okay. They haven't had waivers for COVID issues.
So we're still a year. Once he gets a waiver, we don't get to see him for the year. So.
He probably will play this year, but he's just technically not yet. I bet he almost certainly will.
He will.
He is eligible to play this year?
He's going to get the waiver. They're all going to get the waiver.
Okay, okay, okay.
They're either going to pass the rules sometime in the spring or the NCAA is going to give the waiver. The NCAA is on the ropes and taking body blows every day. They don't care about this anymore. They want to move on. So I think you're going to see all these guys get waivers, yeah.
Well, the Nebraska quarterback needs – I don't know that they need more quarterbacks. They need more help around the quarterbacks, as Sam was saying. They need more running backs who can gain yards, especially on first down. You need more receivers who can go get a ball, even if it's not right on the numbers. So I'd be in favor of that. Go get some more guys around the quarterbacks. And I think – do they need a third guy? They've got two. I guess you could, if there's one that you absolutely have to have. Mm-hmm. Don't just go get a guy who's just going to be a guy, and he's not going to play, and he's going to take a roster spot up, and he's never going to play. Because, I think you can always go get one in the portal.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting discussion because, as you mentioned earlier, Sam, Noah Vedral was that security blanket for a while, and then – Luke McCaffrey was that security blanket. So a lot of it depends on what they feel like they have in Logan Smothers. But it's, I think for when you just look at 2021 and how it sets up, I just don't see how bringing in a guy would make a difference at this point. I mean, first of all, you have to convince somebody from somewhere to come in and compete with a guy who's in line to be a four-year starter. I mean, that's not appealing to anybody in that transfer portal. So I don't see, I guess, the likelihood of doing that for the sake of 2021. You know, Smothers was here for a year. He's been immersed in the offense. He'll have had a spring season to get ready and be that guy and essentially be the same age Adrian Martinez was when he had that opportunity in 2018. But, you know, if you're talking about beyond that, if you're starting to look at 2022, when you presume that Martinez will be gone, at that point, you're left with Logan Smothers, Heinrich Harburg, two or three walk-ons at that point. Do you feel like you need to recruit over that and have a guy who's willing to sit for a year? So I don't know. It's a tough situation. And then where do you get those guys from? Junior college this year? Maybe the FCS level if they don't play? And then, you know, I went back and listened to some of what Mario Verduzco said about how they recruit quarterbacks from a year ago, and a lot of it he said too is you just don't know until these guys come in if they're what you want from a mental standpoint. What kind of offense did they run? How quick do they process things? Like it's all a wild card anyway. So yeah. I kind of tend to agree with you, Tom. Like I feel like those scholarship spots could be used better elsewhere as opposed to making it a fourth scholarship for next season, which by the way would be more than Nebraska's had for any season under Scott Frost so far. They've had exactly three scholarship quarterbacks for the entirety of three seasons under Scott Frost. So adding another one would actually, you know, be a departure from what they've done. So I would think if I were in their position, I would not bring in a quarterback in this cycle. What do you think?
If you're going to bring in somebody, you either have to bring in a junior college quarterback who's going to play this spring. I don't know, an FCS quarterback or a transfer portal quarterback. Again, the FCS could play this spring, or a high school, another high school guy. I would be surprised if, you know, the automatic answer today was we're just going to stand pat. And some of that is because the way these guys think, I think they're just very aggressive with roster management. And so they may want to get another guy in there who bridges the gap between Martinez and Smothers. The argument you can make for standing pat, though, is, everybody knows who the starter is. And everybody knows who the backup is. And this will give the backup an opportunity to really develop, you know, like get all the number two snaps, work and work and work in camp. And then, you know, you've got the advantage of the number three guy probably knowing going into Nebraska that he needs a year or two. And I don't think Heinrich's going to be a jumpy, I'm out of here kind of guy. I think everybody involved in that situation knows a lot of talent, need to sharpen some things up. It's going to take a year or two. And then you have the advantage of knowing that you have a walk-on who I think is a fourth-year guy in Matt Masker. You know, I think you have in Matt Masker a player who could be your legitimate number three. Like I don't think they would, you know, like he's a guy that can like do all those things for you and give you a chance to redshirt Harburg and just say, all right, you're going to redshirt. So I think the question becomes, do you think that Logan Smothers is a good enough backup if Martinez gets hurt? And or do you think Matt Masker is?
And yeah.
It's, again, Logan Smothers can redshirt this year and be a third-year freshman. Is Matt Masker your backup? Will you get a transfer portal QB who is better than the 3 years that Matt Masker will have had in the program and is definitively your number two, and then is also willing to stick around and compete for starting quarterback job later on? I don't know. I mean, those are the parameters they have to look at. Again, I think there's a lot of people who are like, oh, they've got to go get a quarterback. And I'm like, well, you have to assess what you already have. And you have to assess that, again, the player you're recruiting is not going to be a starter. There's no way that guy is going to beat out Adrian Martinez, 4-year starter, unless you're falling into somebody way better than anybody at this moment would think they could get. So you're looking to thread the needle with that transfer quarterback. And that's, I think, a hard thing to do. Jace Reuter, who transferred from North Carolina, is very intriguing. So he left North Carolina. He's from the state of Kansas. That kid is interesting. Nebraska probably could have had him out of high school. Didn't. I don't think they offered him right away. Jace Reuter would be interesting. Would he be willing to come here, sit for a year, then try for the starting quarterback job against Smothers? I don't know. But there's probably not a lot of Jace Reuters out there, and I don't know that Jace Reuter wants to come here. He might be able to go to K-State where, you know, he would compete with the guy that was behind Skylar Thompson. I don't know.
Yeah, and like we talked about, they have there's an urgency to win in year four. And so if Martinez goes down, that urgency is still there against a hellacious schedule. Do you roll with Smothers in those instances? Do you go with Matt Masker? Do you bring in somebody else? But again, I just don't know who's going to come in. And then we talk about the departures, and it really, I think, puts it in perspective. I mean, think of all the snaps that Noah Vedral and Luke McCaffrey took up in the last 2 years. Those guys are going elsewhere. All that Nebraska invested in them, learning the offense, number one, number two snaps that they all got for 2 years each. I mean, a ton of time and coaching went into those guys, and now they're gone. And so you still have Martinez, and you have nobody else on scholarship who's been there longer than a year. And it's just, I agree, threading the needles is a good way to put it, because you're not going to over recruit Martinez, but again, these guys are transferring because they want to play. That's why quarterbacks are in the transfer portal. Like, convincing a guy to sit out a year after he transfers kind of goes against the whole ethos of the move, in my opinion. So it's a really, I think, interesting discussion, and maybe one Nebraska doesn't have to make until the end of this spring football season. Maybe something materializes then. But I suppose if I were them, I wouldn't rule it out. But I don't think you force the issue now either. Maybe you wait and see how this strange, unprecedented spring season plays out at some of the lower levels.
Tom, we're going to talk recruiting for a minute. If you want to
stick, I got to go. Thank you.
Thank you,
Tom.
Thanks for Tom Chattel for joining us. Also Dirk Chatelain. All right, Evan, let's bust through this recruiting here real quick. Nebraska is going to recruit a quarterback for 2022, and they're also going to start heating up on the 2022 recruiting front. We'll start with quickly Avante Dickerson, the Omaha Westside cornerback, who is a 2021 decision. He's going to make a decision next Wednesday. I think it's down in Nebraska and Oregon, and it wouldn't surprise me if Oregon was the lean. I think if Avante Dickerson wanted to have gone to Nebraska, he would have gone to Nebraska on signing day in December. But you never know. I think Nebraska still got a shot here, and I guess we'll find out next week. I think Nebraska's done everything it could there, and I think the kid just kind of wanted to go somewhere else. And has long leaned away from going to Nebraska and just going somewhere else. But we'll see. We'll see. I don't know that. He hasn't talked to anybody. So, you know, what he's told coaches who then talk to recruiting services, I don't know. But he hasn't really told – I don't think he's told anybody within his circle or anybody in the media what he's going to do. So there's still 5 or 6 days left to make that decision, and we'll find out. On to you with recruiting 22 quarterbacks, Evan, and then you can also talk about whatever else you want to talk about with recruiting, and then I'll hit on the Omaha kids.
Yeah, so I just had a story, Nebraska hitting on 2022 quarterbacks, and it kind of relates to what we're talking about with how Nebraska is trying to acquire talent at that spot. And so whether or not they decide to bring in somebody in 2021, it's pretty well established, and they've made it clear that they want a scholarship quarterback in every class. Mario Verduzco said last spring that Scott Frost wants 5 scholarship quarterbacks on the roster at any one time. That's not been the case at Nebraska. They've never had more than 3, but that's kind of what they hope to do. And that kind of raises the floor a little bit for maybe who would be left after the inevitable transfers occur. But they've offered 15 2022 quarterbacks so far. They made an offer over the weekend to a guy named Taven Jackson out of Greenwood, Indiana. He's the younger brother of Indiana basketball player Trace Jackson Davis. So you might have heard of his brother if you follow men's basketball. But he fits the prototype of what Nebraska's looking for. I mean, their template's pretty well established right now. They need someone who can run. They need someone, or they want somebody who can process information quickly. That sort of thing. And so he was, it was notable that they offered him because they hadn't made a quarterback offer since July. So this was somebody that they put out, but technically they have 11 guys that they've offered who have not committed. I think you can shrink that pool a little bit as far as guys who may seriously be in contention to go to Nebraska. I think one that's interesting is AJ Bianco. He's a guy out of Honolulu, Hawaii. And as we saw, Nebraska just made some inroads there with Wyndon Ho'ohuli as a linebacker prospect. And they didn't play a high school season this year. They didn't in the fall, and their spring season got wiped out as well. So that's a guy who just has a couple of offers, Hawaii, Washington State, Nebraska, who I think is interesting. And because of the effects of the pandemic, he's still under the radar. Another guy, AJ Duffy, was somebody who played in California last year, but he's transferring to IMG Academy because of the uncertainty around COVID and whether they'll be allowed to return to play.
Understandable.
He recently put Nebraska in his top 15. So I think that's somebody else. 15. Believe me, I know. I you can roll your eyes.
Oh, it's fine. Nebraska will probably end up in his top 5. I mean, they're going to need a quarterback.
I totally get it.
15.
I totally get it. And then, you know, they offered a guy in July by the name of Gavin Wimsatt. He's from Kentucky.
Yeah, he can play.
He's going to announce his top seven pretty soon. I imagine Nebraska will be in that. So, and there are a handful of other guys, and you got to toss your hat in the ring. And some of these guys are being recruited by top programs, but those are a handful of guys, you know, who could contend in that spot for Nebraska. And again, Nebraska has no commits in the 2022 class. That's not unusual. A lot of Power Five schools are in that same boat, given that the dead period, which has lasted since last March, is going to go at least through this coming April 15th. So you're talking more than a calendar year. So it's going to be kind of a slow go. Yes. But, you know, I just think when you talk about that, we talked about quarterback discussions before and how Nebraska needs an elite guy. They're going after some. And as we've seen, if you don't hit on those top guys, you need to find somebody who's an elite athlete that you can, that has potential. And Luke McCaffrey was a guy like that who they felt like they could mold. I think Heinrich Harburg is a guy like that. So we'll see if they go that route again. Guys with elite, you know, clay to mold, so to speak.
Yeah, Heinrich's got a lot of good stuff. You just hope that again, they take the time and he takes the time to let that kind of develop, because he got some offers and they were, you know, Boston College doesn't run a triple option offense. They were running a pro style system. So you can see the arm talent there. People are, I think, a little lower on him than they probably should be.
There's some good play there.
Verduzco, like you said, has got to shape it. But there's some good stuff there with him. There is.
Go ahead.
That's it. So the Omaha guys, right?
Yeah.
There's four of them. Deshaun Woods, Devin Jackson, Michael Riley, and Caden Helms. We talked to all four of them. A couple of notes. One, a lot of schools from outside Nebraska and Iowa are making a push for these kids specifically. Arizona State, Missouri, Michigan State. Now Oklahoma's offered a couple of them. Although that's brand new. I haven't talked to them since Oklahoma offered Caden Helms and Jackson. Texas A&M. So there's going to be some new schools up in here, partially because of Zoom. You don't have to apportion a coach to take a day or two to travel here. They can just do it over Zoom. So there's some schools that are going to be in the mix, pushing hard for Nebraska, pushing hard for these kids in Omaha. And we'll see what happens once it opens up. But for now, I think there's some schools that are making moves in Omaha that haven't done that before, particularly Missouri, which has really not recruited the state of Nebraska at all. And now they're asking Deshaun Woods, who's recruiting you the hardest? And he goes, definitely Missouri. You know, sometimes it's overwhelming. So they're putting a full court press on some of these kids in Omaha. The other thing that I think is that, although the timing of Wandale Robinson leaving is not great, the development of Nebraska's tight ends may be more beneficial than certain fans or recruiting people think at this moment. We'll have a story on Caden Helms and Michael Riley maybe today or tomorrow, but both of them indicated that the direction of Nebraska's offense in favor of tight ends is improving Nebraska's stature with both of them. I know there's been some scuttlebutt that, you know, Riley is unlikely to come to Nebraska, or there's something about, you know, one of his stepbrothers not getting an offer from Nebraska. That's Javon Ducker, who went to Northern Illinois. I think I would just say that Michael.
We may have lost Sam. He'll be back soon. But as he was saying, certainly the talent in the city of Omaha is as good as it's been. These guys are becoming national recruits now. So it's, I think, gone are the days where if you're in Nebraska, you can just assume these guys are going to come here, or even assume that these guys will fly under the radar. I mean, that much has changed even in the last handful of years. So it will be interesting to see just how much Nebraska can stay in this thing. Because as we've seen, they're kind of stuck in this hard, between a rock and a hard place, where you can't go to the coasts and feel like you can build the bulk of your class there. And you have to be really selective about the guys that you bring in. But at the same time, within your own backyard, if your talent base is being poached, is being given attention that it never has before, that's a challenging situation as well. So Nebraska has some challenges there. So I think Sam's done, and then so are we. So it's another Pick Six podcast today. We'll be back with signing day next week. It sounds like Scott Frost will be talking at that, so that should be interesting to get some more updates and things on what's been happening within the program. They'll have at least the one signee next week in Wyndon Ho'uhuli, the linebacker from Hawaii, and maybe another player or two at that time as well. Who knows? We'll see how that wraps up. But for Sam McEwen, I'm Evan Bland. Stay spry out there, Husker fans, if you're in the Nebraska area. Keep shoveling, fighting the good fight, and hopefully we'll come out for spring here before we know it. Thanks.